Hey, how's it going? Welcome to the Football Diary podcast. It's FA Cup fourth round weekend, and that old cliche still rings true, doesn't it? The magic of the cup still remains, and I'm sure Wrexham fans would agree. Wrexham 3, Sheffield United 3, in front of a packed crowd at Wrexham with one superstar owner in the stands who seems to be looked at every 10 seconds, it feels like, on the TV cameras. But yeah, Wrexham unlucky to go 3-3 against Sheffield United. It could have been a dramatic win for them. Sheffield United pulled it back in the 95th minute, but yet another entertaining game involving Wrexham in the FA Cup. Miles, they've got something about them, haven't they? What is it about Wrexham this season that's really catching the eye, do you think?
Yeah, undoubtedly the new owners have lifted things in the whole club and the atmosphere around them, and the supporters have obviously been fantastic from day one. It's a really historic club, and you can see the following means so much to them to see their team back at some sort of level where they're getting the recognition that they used to have before they went through this turbulent time under such poor ownership before, where he basically abused the club, stripped all its assets and tore them apart and left them really in a precarious position. It's really nice to see them get back to where they kind of belong in some degree. Obviously, they sit top of the league as well, and a cup run, that's the kind of spotlight that the new owners and the fans will have always hoped for. Of course, you're always going to be drawn to the Hollywood storyline, but on the pitch, yes, it's come from investment, of course, but they look like a really good footballing side, playing above their current level, particularly when you've got someone like Paul Mullin up front who could comfortably be playing in League One, if not the Championship. Yeah. He's an excellent striker. I think he's got something like 94 goals in his last 120 games, which is just, it's a phenomenal record at any level. And he really looked like the difference maker in this game too. So they'll be gutted not to already have their place in the fifth round, to be honest. But you could kind of see them getting a result even at Bramall Lane, which is a really exciting time for them, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the home advantage really helps them, doesn't it, as well? The crowd was so loud, and it did feel like that cliche 12th man for them in some ways. But Dave,
that's... It was 9,909 fans.
That's a lot.
At a non-league ground. I know, obviously, Wrexham's ground is a bit different to a traditional non-league stadium, and because of the heights they've been at before, you do expect that, and obviously with the media attention they've got, but unbelievable attendance that is. It shows how behind the club people are right now.
And one stand under development as well. So yeah, Not even full capacity, really. But I was going to say to you, Dave, it was not the first time they've kind of enthralled in front of the cameras as well. In the last round against Coventry, another end-to-end game where they pulled no punches, really. They didn't sit back. They took the game to Coventry, and they did the same against Sheffield United this time, didn't they? Despite Sheffield taking the lead quite early on, it didn't deter them. They came back strong and really should have won the game had it not been for just a lapse of concentration in the final moments, really.
100%. I think if you look at the response that they gave, a lot of teams, lower league teams, could probably respond terribly to going behind in the first minute. I kind of worried for them a little bit because all the build-up before the game, you know, they spoke to obviously Ryan Reynolds, the way he speaks about the club, you can only look at him in a really positive way, because no wonder this wave of positivity that Wrexham fans are riding at the minute, and the energy that they're gaining from their new owners and just the whole atmosphere around the club. Obviously, they have the TV show on as well, which is actually a really good watch. You can see why they're top of the league and why they're playing the way they are, because it's not just the players, it's the whole atmosphere around the club, and it plays such a pivotal part really in the success of a football team, and we've seen that. But this game, obviously I've got to give a lot of credit to Paul Mullin, and 7 goals in 5 FA Cup games this year is ridiculous. And I've seen a lot of mentions about call ups to the Wales team as well, which is quite an interesting one to see. Obviously, it helps them being in the limelight, with obviously that's what their owners bring to the club as well. But you've got to praise the way they played in this game. If you look at the statistics as well, how many shots they had, this wasn't the performance of a non-league team.
No,
it was impressive to see. And like I say, it's not the first time they've done it in the cup, and they're doing it in the league every week, it feels like. So a big step up from how they were doing last season, Miles. But which players, apart from Paul Mullin, who you've already mentioned, kind of sprinkling that extra stardust on the team at the moment? Because it's a work in progress, of course it is. But going forwards, they look brilliant, don't they?
Yeah, I think Jones in particular was excellent in this game as well and took his goal very well. I think the main thing is all of them on that pitch, they were up against players that, let's not forget, were in the Premier League just a couple of years ago. Like Ollie McBurnie went for a big fee at one point. John Egan was playing in the Premier League. So this isn't an easy test. It's not necessarily the kind of big headline grabbing kind of result that they wanted, and it's not against someone like Chelsea or United, but it's still a huge coup for them. And actually, the way that they've built this club up, it has to be admired. I know some people might be kind of skeptical over the intentions of their owners, but we're in a world where football is being taken over by oil states and countries and politicians getting involved every left, right, and centre. So I'd much rather see this project where two guys who love sport are seeing what they can do with the club and their ambitions, obviously, to get Wrexham right up to the Premier League. And when you see the buy-in from the fans and the community and the playing staff that they already have continuing to develop, there's no reason why they can't achieve slightly more than where they are even now. They probably feel like they might be even behind schedule. They probably should have been promoted last year with the investment. But the fact that they're still going, they're still kicking on, the fact that the owners didn't lose interest should be a really comforting sign to the fan base in particular. And the work they're trying to do with the community hasn't come easy. If anyone's watched the documentary, you'll see the fight they went over to even buy the stadium back. That was a real struggle. But they stuck with it. They've invested the money where necessary. And the playing squad reflects that. I know it's easy to just focus on Mullin, but it has to be the focal point because that is an exact sign of where Wrexham need to be, looking at players that are above their current level to get them to that next step. And this was a great step in the right direction, 100%. I hope they can get through the replay. They deserve it.
Well, Sheffield United fans will be kind of frowning at that comment because it feels like the attention is off them completely. And I mean, they're having a good season in their own right anyway, aren't they, Sheffield United? So that makes this result even more improbable. And that's kind of the magic of the cup again, as we were talking about. And I do feel like the owners are falling in love with football a little bit more every time things like this happen. And you can see, you know, that, well, it's coming to a game like this. In the middle of, you know, the end of January, it's a cold, wet, horrible afternoon, but the atmosphere he must have witnessed just makes it all the worthwhile, this investment he's made. But if they do get through, it'd be interesting to see how they come up against, say, a Premier League side. But having said that, there are fewer Premier League sides in the FA Cup left now, so.
Did you see Blake Lively posting that she'd signed up for ESPN just to watch her husband have an anxiety attack? Which is excellent. Wrexham FC were trending in America yesterday on Twitter,
I believe
which
it.
is just, that's such a funny thing to see, like the development of that club and that they're growing this new fan base in Philadelphia in particular. Like, that's so nice for them as well. And the revenue that'll bring with it shows why this was a worthwhile investment, but also how it can help them reach that next level. I mean, a non-league club sponsored by TikTok is, that's phenomenal, isn't it, really? So they're obviously bringing in money too. It's incredible to watch.
They're quite surreal, aren't they, as a project? And I think it's still,
yeah.
it feels like some kind of weird fairy tale or some kind of movie unfolding in front of your eyes. And when you see results like the last two in the cup for Wrexham, when they've had sendings off and end-to-end action and last-minute goals, it does kind of follow the script very much, doesn't it, as well? So yeah, real entertainment.
Gotta say though, if you're John Egan and you score a 95th minute equaliser against a non-league side and start shushing the fans and cupping your ear. Come on, have a bit of class, mate. Like, they're non-league. I know they've got these big owners, but I thought that was ridiculous.
Well, do you know what you were mentioning earlier about the point of football fans and how they feel about ownership and, you know, how the Wrexham fans have really kind of bought into the project that's happening. It does raise questions about how fans feel about ownership generally, because we all want to have wealthy investors in our club, but only from certain backgrounds. And, you know, we don't want to cheat the system. We don't want to spend a fortune when we can't live beyond our means and things like that. But this is such a nice way of seeing a story like that develop, especially for a club like Wrexham that have had a really tough time over the last 20, 30 years. I've only ever known them to be a struggling non-league team or a struggling league team at the very bottom of the pyramid. So yeah, it's quite nice to see something positive coming for them.
Yeah, it looked like they were gone a few years back, didn't it?
Did, yeah.
So the fact that they're going to get to this point where they're going to be back in the Football League soon, it's hard to get to that level. Like, they've found that the hard way over the last 2 years when they were trying so hard to push to get promoted again. It looks like they'll do it this year, but it's hard because only the top team go up. Like, that's like, automatically anyway. That's really difficult, isn't it?
Yeah. It's an FA Cup of shocks, I think, so far. Like I say, not many Premier League teams left in. But one shock that wasn't actually a shock was Brighton beating Liverpool, wasn't it, really? So, yeah, Brighton win 2-1 against Liverpool, and it didn't feel like much of a surprise, I've got to say. Like, Brighton was such a good team, and they performed so well again against Liverpool. And that man, Matoma, keeps producing the goods with such an amazing, well-taken goal. Dave, Brighton are lovely to watch, aren't they? After the stuff they've gone through this season and the changes they've had, you just wouldn't know that a manager came in halfway through the season and transformed them in this way, would you?
No, and I think the manager's definitely surprised a lot of people, how he's come in. He's built from, obviously, what Graham Potter laid with his foundations. And if anything, Brighton, especially since, you know, since De Zerbi's come in, they actually look more potent going forward, which for me was probably one of their shortcomings over the last year. If anything, they've created so many chances. They don't struggle with creating chances. They dominate the ball against a lot of teams, but they just couldn't put the ball in the net. And ever since he's come into the team, you've got to give him credit because everybody's been chipping in. You look at, obviously, the likes of Solly March, Welbeck, when he's obviously come on. The rise of, obviously, Evan Ferguson's been outstanding. McAllister, he obviously can't praise him enough for what he's done as well. And even necessarily, you've obviously got Casado as well. We don't know, obviously, what the future of him is going to happen. But him managing that situation and being able to maintain some sort of positivity in the team, they just look... And I think, well, the main thing for me is Fulham have had a lot of praise this season. But if you actually look at Brighton, they've got two games in hand on Tottenham. They're only 5 points behind Tottenham. Yeah. They can go into fifth place if they win both of those games. And that's just crazy to say.
Yeah, it's a comfortable top six team in the making, it seems like, doesn't it, Brighton? And I say, not a shock that they beat Liverpool. But, I mean, what's changed under De Zerbi, do you think, Miles? Because, I mean, he's got a good reputation of playing really attacking football. He's definitely brought that to Brighton so far. But... How has it happened like this so soon?
I think the infrastructure at the club means that they're always prepared for change. So although they lost a manager that they clearly thought very highly of, they had their next person in place very quickly. Yeah. That seems to me like that was someone that they already had on their radar in case this kind of inevitable thing where they lost Potter happened. And that meant they were able to react really fast. And that's not a surprise because Bloom's run the club so well. We've seen this happen with the playing staff time and time again. Let's not forget that Brighton have sold for big money the majority of their star players over the last couple of years. They lost Ben White, Cucurella, Basuma, Trossard now. And a lot of these players were on no one's radar until they turned up at Brighton, shone, and then moved on for huge fees.
Yeah.
The good thing is they've always been replaced really well. There's talk of Casado going now for 70 million they've had a bid rejected for. Let's not forget that they also lost in Mbeumo, for example. Like, Brighton are always prepared to deal with what happens to them. And actually, the change to De Zerbi seems really well-timed because they've become so solid under Potter and become so confident on the ball, like you say, and retain possession so well, that all it needed was an attacking coach to come in and fine-tune the top end of the pitch. He hasn't really had to worry about the back end because they already had that. Yeah. They already had that well-developed. And that's a really nice progression. We see that quite often in football, that progressive side develop. And now they're at a point where this isn't a cup upset at all.
No.
It's a perfectly fair result. You're not even considering that. Brighton are in a position where they've got a World Cup winner in the middle of their midfield. They might lose another star player, but they've signed a new midfielder today. I think his name's Ayari. Never heard of him. I guarantee he'll be brilliant. Because I trust Brighton like that. I know that Brighton are in a place where if they've identified a talent, the likelihood is it's going to work well. Look at someone like Tarik Lamptey. Tarik Lamptey obviously played very well in this game. He sort of got his goal. I know it's been given to Dunk, but you never know with that one. He might be moving on, and Brighton are ready to cash in on him because he's kind of surplus to requirements because their investment has just been so smart this whole time. And that's just excellent to see. That's another club doing it quite organically. They've not spent big fees. They've not gone mental in the transfer market, even when they have the money too, let's be honest. Brighton, how much have Brighton brought in over the last two transfer windows?
Yeah, silly money. Really good.
Must be 200 million at least. And if they sell Casado, then yeah, how are they going to reinvest that money? They're not going to go and spank 50 million on one player. They're going to be smart with it. And it's benefiting them.
I was going to say the shades of Leicester City and how they've been recruiting in their peak years. And that's not to say that Brighton are going to win the title anytime soon. But the amount of money they're making, it feels like a model that's sustainable. But also, it must be a little bit of a shame for Brighton fans as well to see some of their favourites come and go so quickly. And the next one, I think, is Mitoma as well. Well, yeah, Mitoma is such a talent, but he cost, what, £2.5 million? Yeah. And there was no eyes on him because nobody scouts that part of the world. And that's kind of what they do. They exploit parts of the world where there's no eyes on them at all. Look for some stats that really fit their kind of player profile. And lo and behold, they fit in like a glove. So, I mean, can they sustain this in this day and age? Is it something that they can do and still kind of push for like that top six finish, do you think?
I think you can. And I think, like you say, Leicester is a good example. They managed to do it at one point where they were selling players for big fees, but they never really spent that money. Look at how they brought in the likes of Kante and Mahrez by targeting markets that weren't being examined exactly as Brighton are doing. Long term, that might be problematic because eventually people cotton on to where you're getting these players from. I highly imagine that people start looking for the next Moyes Caicedo whilst this Caicedo is joining Arsenal, to be honest. Because otherwise, Brighton are just going to keep this momentum going.
Yeah,
I'm surprised that they've not tried to target some slightly higher profile just to try and solidify their place. The likelihood is in the summer, Mitoma and Alexis McAllister will be on the radar of every club in Europe.
Yeah.
So you don't know where Brighton go from here, but I trust them. You say like their fans will be disappointed to see their favourites go. Yeah, they will, but they'll have a new favourite in 6 months because that's the way this model's been working. And as long as De Zerbi keeps this group together to a degree and keeps the spine of it fairly similar, he can regenerate it. And look at someone like Solly March. Dave mentioned him. It's a perfect example. Someone that actually, he's never really played at an elite level before. He's not someone that's necessarily always on our radar, but he's having a fantastic season. That, to me, is good coaching. That's not even just good scouting. That's developing a good, harmonious team that know how to play for each other. It's just, I think they're fantastic, Brighton. I'm really happy to see them progress. I wouldn't be surprised if they got really far in this competition, maybe even all the way.
Yeah, I think this competition and the way it's playing out as well, with so many Premier League teams dropping by the wayside, it's kind of set up for a team like Brighton to take advantage of that, isn't it? And go on a fairy tale cup run. And you imagine seeing Brighton lift the FA Cup, how good that would be for English football. Getting ahead of myself now, talking about title wins and FA Cups and things like that. But Dave, Dave, they're impressive to watch. They beat Liverpool convincingly here, albeit with a last minute winner. That it wasn't undeserved at all, was it? And I think 2-1 kind of flattered Liverpool to an extent, didn't it?
Yeah, if you looked on the main of the game, Brighton had the better opportunities, the better chances. Alisson made a couple of really good saves. One against Solly March, which was a great ball from Mitoma, came sort of to the back post and Solly March managed to get there. But it was one of those where it was kind of an instinctive save from Alisson, which we've seen him do so many times over the last few years. And I'd say Liverpool were fortunate, really, to not be behind in the game a lot earlier on.
And get some players sent off as well.
Oh, don't get me started.
It's horrendous.
He knew it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could tell.
I've got no words on his face.
It was about to leave the pitch, I think, weren't he, until the yellow was shown. Yeah.
I mean, there were 3 or 4 bad decisions over the course of this weekend. I messaged you, didn't I, yesterday about a couple of decisions that were just baffling, really, and ended in 2 bad injuries for 2 players. Eriksen, obviously, at Ferguson, which looked an awful one. Even Fabinho looks really surprised that he didn't get sent off. He looked as soon as he looked up, he knew it was a bad one and he just expected to be shown a red card. And somehow, even after VAR looking at it,
On the other hand of that, Andy Carroll got his second yellow and looked genuinely really surprised that he got it. It was a terrible tackle.
Yeah.
It was a funny one, man. You talk about bad decisions, though, Dave. I think the worst decision was probably Klopp picking Trent against Mitoma, wasn't it? Stunningly bad.
I just don't know why there's no accountability for these decisions after games. Why? It seems to be brushed under the carpet a little bit by pundits or commentators, just don't seem to mention about it.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. There seems to be an agenda there somewhere. But yeah, I mean, in this game in particular, they thoroughly deserve the win, Brighton. And mentioning there a couple of players as well, another one who's come in, Estupiñán, I think has actually been a really good buy for them as well.
Really good.
He's gone under the radar. And they've got a few other, you mentioned there, Mitoma coming in. It wasn't until the last few games really where he's really kind of burst onto the scene. He's actually been very much under the radar. They've got a couple of other really talented players. They've got Sarmiento on the bench as well, who's a young, talented player. Wouldn't surprise me him next season if they if they need to replace, he comes onto the scene. They're just buying really smart. And obviously what they're doing is like you mentioned, Mike, it does seem to be quite similar to Leicester, how Leicester have bought over the last few years. You can't give them enough praise.
Yeah. A lot of Brighton love today, which is great to see, isn't it? Yeah.
We praise them. Can we have our fun now?
Go on then. What's your fun, Miles?
Can we just talk about how bad Liverpool are for a little while?
I was going to scoot over that because I felt like we should focus solely on Brighton. But do you know what? I'm not going to turn this down, this opportunity to gloat. So yeah, go on, you start.
No, it's not even gloating, but you have to acknowledge the position that Liverpool are in, because this seems like a new low now, doesn't it? Because they sit, what, ninth in the league. They're out of the FA Cup that they won last year. They're out of the Carabao Cup that they won last year. They've got absolutely no hope in the Champions League with the way that this squad is shaped right now. And I can't see them getting anywhere near the top four on current form, because every week you kind of expect Liverpool to get it together and turn it around because you know the quality that's within that starting 11.
Yeah.
But it seems that there's some problems there. Salah is a shadow of the player we saw last year. At times, you just feel like he just looks nervous all of a sudden, and the things that were coming off for him over the last few years just seem to have stopped. I wonder how much his connection with Mane really kind of papered over some cracks.
Well, I was
going to
say,
what
is it then? Why is Salah like he is this season? What's going on?
I think confidence plays a big part in it. He's always been a very confident player, and the more Liverpool's results suffer, the more he's going to suffer, of course. But even... I don't know. I wonder if things have got a bit stale for him there, and maybe he should have looked for a new challenge, because to me, it seems like a manager of the quality of Jurgen Klopp identifies the problems in that side and addresses them. But the same issues happen every single game.
Yeah.
Every single game, Salah fails to track back on the right-hand side, Trent gets exposed and they concede from that position. They are two world-class footballers. You can't tell me that a manager's not saying to them, we need to stop that happening for a while. I understand trying to take your game to a team and not wanting to adapt how you play too much because you're confident in yourselves. Right now, Liverpool can't be confident in themselves. They need to address those issues. And because they're missing players across the pitch, because they've had injury problems all season and they lack that depth, they need to get the basics right at the moment. That's the thing that's going to turn them a corner. They're not doing that. They're absolutely not doing that. And the quality in that squad and that starting 11 just seems to have dropped. It feels like they've only picked one area of the pitch that they're going to invest in and improve, and that's the forward line. They seem to buy in players like Jota whilst they were already strong, and that's exactly how you should act in terms of changing cycles over. But they've completely failed to do that in midfield.
Yeah. I think you made the point, Miles,
really
actually.
Paying the price.
A few pods ago, you said that one of the big problems with Liverpool is, like Man City, they kind of evolve their positions as and when they've needed it. A position here, a position there. Had players waiting in the wings to replace those ones that are fading slightly. Liverpool have burnt out their current crop for two seasons solid, it feels like, and not really started introducing new talent until now. Dave, it's too much too soon, isn't it, really, for a team to gel and evolve that quickly? Why haven't they evolved in the same way City have and kind of done it player at a time? Is it a financial restraint or something else? What's going on?
I mean, I don't think it's a secret that the club's up for sale or they're looking for some sort of investment. There's obviously clearly restraints there in terms of finances for what they can do. But having said that, they've just been out there and bought Cody Gakpo, another forward, and not a midfielder.
So I don't get the financial restraint thing, because this is a club that in the summer spent, what, $72 million on Darwin Nunes, is that right?
And apparently eyeing up Jude Bellingham as well, who's going to be
$100 million. They're looking at
Bellingham. Yeah.
They didn't hide their interest in Tchouaméni in the summer as well. They put a bid in for him. That would have been $80
million. And Mbappe two seasons ago, do you remember that?
So I understand that there's this talk that they can't compete financially, but they are. It's not like they're not spending money. They've spent more money than a lot of clubs around that sort of area of the table have. I'm sure, but just in really odd areas.
Yeah, it's a strange one.
I mean, I think they obviously thought all the injuries they've got up front were a bigger problem than what's been going on in midfield. And I know, obviously, even before this kind of disastrous run of form that they've been on in the last month and a half, Liverpool, whether they didn't deem it as big an issue as what it's probably kind of what's right in front of them now, and kind of very obviously plain to most people that they need investment in midfield. I know they've bought, they've obviously given a couple of youngsters opportunities, obviously giving Harvey Elliott a lot of games in midfield, and they just can't seem to get the balance right. And I just think he's out of ideas. I just think Klopp doesn't know how to fix this problem right now.
And that's how you end up with players like Arthur Mello.
Yeah.
Unknown. And that's been an absolute disaster. Who could have told him that was going to happen? Anyone that's watched him play for the last 2 years,
but the thing
probably.
Is totally uncharacteristic from the way they've been doing transfer business over the last 5-6 years, because they've always seemed to be really good at identifying areas of weakness and kind of fixing it, especially investing money that the limited resources they had, the Coutinho money. Everybody talks about the difference it made with buying Van Dijk, buying Alisson. You know, these are players that weren't like at their highest level yet, but were definitely on the cusp, and they kind of turned them into stars. They're not really doing that anymore. Or if they are, they're doing it not in an evolved way. So it's really confusing to see, I don't know, Klopp's body language change. And, you know, we need an energised Jurgen Klopp for the Premier League as well, but he looks deflated at the minute.
If they get knocked out of the Champions League in the next round, does he go?
I think he does, but I also think he shouldn't, because it's funny to begin with. But also, I think he needs this season to kind of evolve and write it off almost as kind of, we're still kind of transitioning into this new team, this new starting 11. And I think next season, if he goes in with a fresh mindset, buys one or two players to identify to boost that midfield, he could turn it around again. They do, but they won't.
You say that they need to have a transition, but that's got to start somewhere. And it feels like it's not starting properly because they've invested in odd areas. Like you say, Gakpo and Nunes.
Not needed. No.
Nunes is, I think, is actually a lot better than we give him credit for. I think he will come very good for Liverpool. And because of his age and his profile, that's a smart signing in many ways. But again, could you have... Look at how much, like, we just praised Brighton and their recruitment. And they're higher than Liverpool in the league right now, having bought players like Casado for what? How much was Casado? 2.5 million or something like that?
Yeah, it's great value, isn't it?
Identify those players, because Klopp's a good enough coach to develop them. They've paid more than that to get Arthur Mello on loan. It just seems like this weird strategy where they sign players like Fabio Carvalho and Harvey Elliott and look like they're building to the future. And that's logical, but they aren't addressing the main areas of concern on the pitch. It feels like now it's got to be a time where, look, if you're writing your season off, try moving Trent into that midfield now. It solves two of your problems at once.
Nothing to
lose.
Get
a decent right back in.
Yeah.
Move Trent into the midfield. See what happens. Because it can't be worse than it currently is. Your midfield's looking poor. Trent's looking defensively poor. But you can get all of his qualities into one of your problem areas in the pitch. I've been saying it for... I can't even remember how long. Now seems like the perfect opportunity to try those things, but I feel like Klopp's too stubborn to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know if, obviously, it's ridiculous sometimes. Some of these clips, especially over the last few weeks of Trent's defending, it's just his positional sense. I don't think he trusts him positionally to perform in a role in midfield where he's able to defend and obviously provide like attacking impetus. I just don't think he trusts him to do it, but he still plays him. Still plays him at right back. So
yeah, exactly. That's such a weird way of looking at it, though, because when you've got Fabinho in the midfield next to you, you shouldn't have to worry so much about your defensive qualities, and you can focus more about being on the ball and taking Liverpool on the front foot. That's exactly what Trent's amazing at doing. Finding those small pockets of space to play the ball through, he'd be perfect for that in their midfield. He's the player that they need right now in that sort of area in many ways. And if you're good enough coach, you can develop that in him. I can't see why they persist at playing him in an area he's not good enough in. Like, look at Ten Hag, for example. Ten Hag right now is identifying that maybe Luke Shaw can slot in at that left-handed side of centre-back. It's not his most authentic role. It's not somewhere that we're used to seeing him necessarily. But looking at his attributes, looking at what the squad has, looking at what the squad needs, it makes sense, right? But essentially, Liverpool are looking at a player and going, because your name and because of the qualities you bring in one area, we can just let you make as many mistakes as possible, no matter how much it costs us. They need to give him a rest as well. Get him out of the team for a little while.
That's what I mean.
Get that monkey off his back a little bit.
They have burnt out a few players for two solid seasons, it feels like. And last season was a big one. They played every game possible. So they're still recovering from that, it feels like. So a weird transition all year for Liverpool, I think. But how long does this transition go on for? That's the question.
I think it was mentioned today, this time last year, they'd only lost one game in all competitions.
Seems ages ago, doesn't it? That's the thing.
Different size.
They've transformed so much. And I think for me, the worry of missing out on Champions League football as well, that's got to kind of really think about their plans next season. They're not going to be able to get any players in of any calibre. It's going to affect everything if they don't get that Champions League money.
I think Chelsea got a better chance. I think Chelsea got a better chance of getting Champions League than Liverpool have. At least there's some positivity around Chelsea with all the transfers coming in. And so,
yeah,
that's a different story.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Anyway, we went into Liverpool a bit more than I expected we might. But back to the FA Cup. going to go back to the kind of big game of the round, really, which was City versus Arsenal, which City won. And I don't think either side was really that fussed about the result playing out the way it did. Kind of benefits City more than it does Arsenal. I think Arsenal are quite happy to not have that extra competition to focus on. Can we read anything into this game, Miles? Where do you see the teams now after this?
I actually weirdly worry about City more after
the really?
Game. Not because of the game necessarily. I thought Arsenal played really, really well for a lot of the game. And considering they had taken the opportunity to rest quite a few of the players, that makes sense. It shows where their priorities are. I don't know if I would have played it the same way, because it might have been a chance to build some momentum again and keep that confidence going. And if they'd beaten City in this competition, that would have looked really good for them, and that would have given them a lot more of a faith in the fact they could do it in the league.
Yeah.
Whereas I know now they can go, well, it's a one-off, it was the FA Cup, we were rested, but they've got a terrible record against City. I think City have won something like 12 of the last 13 against Arsenal or something stupid. It's a really high figure. So this might have been an opportunity for Arteta, but he's played it the other way, and I understand why. That's absolutely fine. I've got to say, though, looking at City's results at the moment and then what's happening today with Cancelo, you wonder, are things a bit tempestuous at City right now?
I think there's a few players that aren't happy with the way things are. And it's not for the first time that's been the case. Obviously, Raheem Sterling left last season with similar doubts, didn't he? And there's been a few players who haven't really said exactly what's going on, but you can tell there's friction there. And Cancelo was one of the best players last season.
Yeah.
It's mad.
And Guardiola made a really weird comment the other day that I thought really went under the radar. I wonder if you heard it or you know what I'm talking about. But he was talking about Arteta, and he was singing Arteta's praises, and rightfully so. And he talked about how successful he's going to be going forward. And he said something along the lines of, I remember whenever we played Arsenal, just generally whenever we played, we'd score. Arteta was the first one jumping off the bench, very animated. When we played Arsenal, he would never do that. That's because Arsenal's his club. So I was gutted to lose him. But when his club called him, Arsenal called him, he was always going to go. For me, Barcelona's my club. If they called me, I go immediately. So Arteta goes immediately to Arsenal. And I heard that and I went, whoa, hang on a minute. Did he just say what I think he said?
Is he calling out Barca there again?
I wonder whether he's starting to get to a point where he's like, I might move on now. Because he seems to be trying a lot this year. All of a sudden he brought a number 9 in, who obviously is phenomenal, but that's not how he normally does things. He's kind of putting Walker and Cancelo on a bit of a back burner and trying some more things there. And it just kind of seems like he's having a bit of a laugh this season. I don't know. Something seems to be boiling at City, and I can't quite put my finger on whether I think it's going to end up being successful or they might have a bit of a capitulation at some point.
I saw something online actually a few days ago, and I think there is a lot of frustration building in Pep. But it was mentioned, obviously I don't know whether this is true or not, but it was said that behind the scenes, Pep has mentioned how much more his efforts and his achievements at City would be appreciated if it was at United.
Interesting.
So if it had gone to United and achieved what he has done with City, that it would have been much more appreciated with United than it would at City.
But it's always going to be the way, though,
isn't it?
Would
have had a blank checkbook.
I was going to say, there's always like an asterisk next to City, no matter what they do. And when they eventually win the Champions League, no one will be like in awe at the achievement, because it's kind of expected at some point. So I totally understand that. But he chose the path he chose. And, you know, he's at City and he's won a lot, and he can't really turn his nose up at that. Whether he wants to go back to Barcelona or not, I don't think that's the right move for him at the moment. Barcelona are in a weird state as well. You're right. City are in a strange position right now, aren't they? And I think to be in City's position, win an FA Cup game against the nearest rivals, Arsenal, and still be talked about as if it's a weird season for them, and they're still in title contention as well, kind of shows you really how we're feeling about them, aren't we? But it doesn't affect the league at all. But psychologically, you're right. I think Arsenal could have done with this win if they'd have beat City, and it would have given them a bit more momentum. But one to watch.
The other thing that I really noticed from this game was, after the game, the reaction towards Zinchenko. Did anyone else see this? It made me so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, there was this whole thing of, like, going up to, like, our baby brother almost.
Yeah.
And after a while, I thought it was too much. And it looked like, actually, they weren't kind of engaging in any fun, or, like, they were trying to patronise him a little bit. And you could see he was feeling a bit wound up by it after a while. Like, they're, like, pulling on his ears and trying to put him in a headlock. And it was like, come on, this is a professional footballer. This isn't your kid brother. Like,
yeah, I see what you mean.
He's your rival right now. And I think they were trying to kind of get in his head a little bit and undermine him.
Yeah.
I didn't like it. I feel like it came across very badly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know with City. They're second in the league. They're still in the Champions League. They're still in the FA Cup at this point. They've just knocked out probably the best team in England right now. So it's ridiculous to suggest that they're falling apart. But I think it's just one to maybe keep your eye on.
Yeah. It's a weird one bubbling, isn't it?
You mentioned obviously Cancelo. Phil Foden's been dropped, hasn't he, for a few games.
So apparently Cancelo had a fallout with Guardiola because he wasn't picked for this game. And then it immediately was like, I don't want to be here. Then Guardiola went, okay, bye.
I think there's no players bigger than the club. I read there's been some ill feeling ever since he received that red card. Was it against Fulham?
Yeah, okay. I think so.
That's what I read today. But
it's weird.
Yeah, very strange. Anyway, does nothing for the title race, does it? It's just another title that City can hunt down. But United are in contention for a few trophies as well, Dave. Obviously not the Premier League, but both cups they're still in. They beat Reading 3-1 in a comfortable win as well. Andy Carroll got sent off, which was strange to see. Probably going to be in the final of the Carabao Cup. Quickly, Dave, are you optimistic of silverware for United?
I hope so. And I say that because, obviously, the last few years, the last 10 years, you don't know what you're going to get with United. But what we have shown under Ten Hag is some consistency, and we've shown that we can rebound from a couple of, it feels like two losses. Obviously, we lost against Arsenal, but the Crystal Palace game felt like a loss. I actually felt worse after the Palace game than I did the Arsenal, because I felt we should have beaten Palace. But yeah, I think these last couple of games we've won quite comfortably, which is nice to see, and rested a couple of players along the way. Never nice to lose Christian Eriksen. I think that's a big blow if it's a bad injury, and we've not heard any more on that. But we've got to talk about Casemiro, haven't we?
Yeah, I was going to say, Miles, Casemiro was fantastic, wasn't it? I feel like he's the player that we all wish Paul Pogba would have been, but I feel like he's having more fun in a United shirt than he did in a Real Madrid shirt, strangely.
He looks like he's enjoying himself, doesn't he? And obviously he's got a few connections there. He's got the Brazilian connection with players like Anthony and Fred. And he does seem like he's really appreciating his role in the team, because at Madrid, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, Madrid obviously fits into a midfield full of stars, with a forward line full of stars. And actually this United team, he's probably the biggest name there. And he seems like he's enjoying that as well, that he's taken United on his back. There's a big conversation about this exchange that he had with his agent after United lost to Brentford at the start of the season, where he supposedly texted him and said, I can fix this. And it's nice that he's seen it as a project for himself. He's not seen it as just a paycheck. And that's been United's problem the last few years.
Yeah.
They've signed players from the likes of Real Madrid or PSG for big fees, and they've kind of come in just to claim their check. And Casemiro seems like he's there to dig United out. And that's the kind of player that fans will really get behind too. So it's a great midfield that they're developing. And for me, the conversation is more about Anthony right now, because it seems that there's a lot of talk of whether or not he's been good enough or what kind of level of success he is. And obviously, every time he tries to do a silly little flick, it makes some sort of viral clip, either because it's amazing or because it's woeful. Mm-hmm. I actually thought in this game we saw some of his finer qualities, because he had a couple of opportunities where he cut in on his left and he looked quite threatening. His ball for Casemiro for his first goal,
true,
absolutely outstanding. I wonder, from your point of view, the both of you, how do you see Anthony so far? Is he a success in your eyes? Can he go on to be more when Sancho comes back? Does that affect him? What do you think of him?
He's quite raw, I think, and he's learning. He's learning the hard way that he's got to have an end product. And I think a lot of players go through this in attacking positions, don't they, where they do try things. Cristiano Ronaldo, back in the day as an 18-year-old, did so many tricks and flicks, and eventually he matured and wow, look at his end product in the end. I don't know about you, Dave, but I think Anthony's got a lot more to offer. I think this is just a learning curve for him.
Yeah, and I know Ten Hag has mentioned about challenging him, having those sort of players that their mentality is strong enough and they're kind of on another level where they know they're good enough and they can deal with the level of the club and the level of play that they are obviously playing at in the Premier League. And we've got to obviously mention as well, how many players have actually come from the Eredivisie and actually done well in the Premier League? How we've seen it so many times, players fail to meet the level. You look at Gakpo at Liverpool at the minute, he is struggling a little bit too with the pace of the play. It's a completely different level. It's so easy to jump on the back of players these days, and especially a top four club, a club as big as United, you are going to get a handful of fans who want, you know, everything here and now. Especially, you mentioned Miles, 80 million. You kind of... That's not his fault, though. That's not the player's fault.
No, I agree.
The club have overpaid by probably 40, 35 million. I do believe he's going to come good. I've got more confidence that he will come good over Sancho. And that's only because of what we've seen. That's only because of what we've seen from Sancho in the Bundesliga and how good he has been and just how little we've seen of him in a United shirt. We've seen more from Anthony, I believe, in the short time he's been here. And more, I've seen more from him to believe that he can make a difference. I know Jadon Sancho, we know about his talent. We know how good a player he can be. But I just want to see more. And that's just obviously the frustrating thing. I'm just kind of a little bit curious now to see where he comes back, because I thought this would be the perfect game for Sancho to come back in. And I think a lot of people were expecting him to play against Reading.
I think Casemiro has to go down as one of the best transfers that United have done in recent years. But on that subject, guys, Miles, transfer market. Obviously, the deadline's looming. Obviously, it will have passed by the time this goes out and you guys are listening to it out there. But what's cooking? What's brewing in the transfer window right now?
It's crazy because that January is normally quite a difficult market to get things done in, but it seems like some pretty high profile moves are about still. Obviously, we talked about Cancelo earlier. That as a move to Bayern is just bizarre business. You never saw that one on the cards. It wasn't even being sniffed at until today, it felt like. The other one that seems to have come back around somehow, despite the club being adamant he was staying, the player coming back into the things and kissing the badge when he scored, but now it looks like Enzo Fernandez is going to end up at Chelsea. And I feel like a broken record because every week we come on here and go, how are Chelsea still spending money? But 120 million for Enzo Fernandez to be a Premier League record, obviously.
Yeah.
And Chelsea just don't seem to have any restraints on them right now. They also signed Gusto from Lyon the other day for 30 million. They brought Madueke in for, I think that was 35, maybe 40. Yeah. We've already seen Modric come in. Like, it's bizarre how Chelsea are managing to operate like this. And there's no sort of drawback on it. That has to come at some point, surely.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's still things to be done. Obviously, there's moves in Europe that will be looked at. There's the Zaniolo situation to resolve at Roma. That's quite a big one. You wonder if Juventus might have to shift a few players before the end of the market with their kind of situation at the moment. And there's some really big issues there. That seems horrible. But I don't really know what to expect from transfer deadline day. It feels like it's going to be more active than it's ever been. Like the other one, Pedro Porro, obviously, as well. That looked all but done for Spurs. And now that's kind of gone on the back burner and might come back up, might not. You never know. It's weird. It's been quite an exciting January transfer window, though, for a change.
Yeah. Cancelo and Alphonso Davies on at wing-back for Bayern Munich sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? They look like they look like another level now with that setup.
But actually, right-back for Bayern looks like something they could have addressed for quite a while, because obviously once they move Kimmich into midfield, they've had Benjamin Pavard there for a while, who looks like he might be going to Barcelona.
I think so, yeah.
So Mazraoui came in the summer. He's not really lifted up any trees there, and he's injured now. So it makes sense. I mean, it always makes sense to sign a player of Joao Cancelo's quality, no matter who you are, really. Mm. There are very few teams in world football that he wouldn't improve, really. But yeah, I can't see how City are prepared to let him go so quickly. It's weird.
Yeah. So I think transfer window is hotting up, like you say. I'm hoping that we don't see any sort of ridiculous sums spent anymore, because I feel like January is such a high profile one for the wrong reasons. There's so many flops that have happened in January and it puts so much pressure on players. So if we do see someone that's going in, like Enzo Fernandez for 100 plus million, I'd worry for him because he's had such a good World Cup. If he then doesn't hit the ground running with Chelsea, don't know, do we suddenly think worse of him like we did James Rodriguez? You know, there's been so many players that have followed a World Cup as well, and you've gone, it's probably not the best time to move.
Yeah, potentially. But the league, like Dave mentioned earlier, the step from the Eredivisie to the Premier League not being a path very well trodden. But from Portugal, it does seem to be. There have been a few players that have made that move that actually they do seem to keep up because stylistically they seem quite prepared for it. It's an alarming amount of money though.
Yeah,
but
is
it anymore? I don't know what this market is. Anthony Gordon just went to Newcastle for 40 million.
Well played, Everton, though, to be fair. That's great money, isn't
it? They're trying to reinvest it in Conor Gallagher now. 40 million straight back out, and he's inevitably going to improve their team. He's a better player than Gordon is. He definitely is. I don't know if that will happen, but
I think it was mentioned that he wasn't interested in going to Everton.
I don't blame him.
Which is kind of understandable.
It's Sean Dyche, yeah.
Actually, final word on
Gordon wasn't interested in going to Everton, and he was already there. He started going to Newcastle already, didn't he?
Final word on Sean Dyche then, Miles. I mean, we said it's probably the most sensible route to go down. Expecting safety for them now?
No. Burnley got relegated last year, didn't they?
Yeah.
I don't know. That squad's terrible. Unless they do something ridiculous tomorrow and today, then I doubt it. They need a lot of investment. They'll only get some. They'll probably fall away into relegation this season.
Who would you have had there? As an Everton fan, who would you have wanted if you were an Everton fan? Not that you are an Everton fan, but who would you
probably
have wanted if you were an Everton fan?
Probably Dyche. I don't think they've got any realistic ambition higher than that. They are a championship club right now. Who would I have wanted? Pep Guardiola, but I don't know with Everton right now. They don't seem to have a strategy or any hope of improving anytime soon. So it's kind of accepting their fate a little bit. Dyche will fight a little bit and maybe get them to 17th and then who knows. But they're giving him a 2.5 year deal, which to me says we know we're going to be in a relegation fight for at least the next 3 seasons if we don't go down before that. That's the most obvious thing to me. Yeah. Dyche isn't going to get Everton into Europe, is he? So it wasn't a short-term deal in the end. Conte doesn't even get a contract that long at Spurs.
It was quite interesting because they mentioned Hasenhüttl was a name that came up, wasn't he, as well?
Yeah.
Might have been better. Alongside Bielsa,
it's a mad move. If that had happened.
I think Dyche is the best appointment out of that bunch.
Anyway, that's it for this week, guys. Thank you for joining us once again. Continue your journey listening to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening to this right now. But obviously, we're on YouTube as well. Keep our growth on there if you can. If you're not subscribed already, hop over there, give us a sub, give us a follow, watch a few of our shorter versions of the podcast. And get involved, leave a comment, and it'd be lovely to hear from you. But until next time, guys, appreciate your time again. Thanks a lot.